All right, question and answer then. We'll go as quickly as we possibly can. I know you're supposed to kind of be getting out of here in 10 minutes. I think that might also be pretty optimistic, but we don't want to waste any of your time, so we'll just ask all the questions. We have a bunch of good questions that we sourced from the community. We're going to be talking about perks, stats, shotguns, fusion rifles, just some general questions that are really great. We'll try to do them as quick as we can. So first question, this is kind of important, the Zer rolls. Recently, XMI, the Zer main ingredient, caused quite a stir. Obviously, we talked about tap the trigger on it earlier. That is getting a nerf. But then the Zer Timelines Vertex, they kept trying to make, you know, XTV happen. I just don't think it's going to happen. But are those rolls like truly random, or did someone pick them and bless the community with those incredibly, incredibly powerful fusion rifles?
So, you know, I saw Zer selling those and I wondered the same thing. And I went and looked into it and nope, they're completely random. The weapons are chosen completely at random. There's no weighting or anything. And the rolls are completely random as well. So it's just wild that we got so many good rolls back to back to back.
Man, I was saying that Zer is now everybody's like favorite vendor right now. Like everybody's waiting to see what he brings. They're holding him hostage in his various spawn locations so they can get different shots at the rolls. So that's a good question. Perks. High impact reserves. Phaeton asks, it's been observed to start with over 50% of the magazine left in PvE. Is that also the case in PvP?
So looking at the perk data, it definitely should only kick in at below 50%. But one thing that could happen is fusion rifles internally have ammo equal to the number of bolts times the number of shots that you see. So you might have noticed if you've done any like deep testing in this that when you've got high impact reserves up, the numbers will increase every bolt. It's easiest to see this in PvE. So what could happen is that you're above the 50% threshold, you start firing, and halfway through the burst, you drop below it. Maybe that could be what's happening.
Okay.
I bet that is, because that the next follow-up question was, if multiple shots are fired within a burst, do the damage bonuses get applied to each shot individually or to the burst as a whole? So that answered that question as well. Is there a specific damage profile for high impact reserves? Like, is it the same on every gun? Is it different on every gun? Is it custom tuned? Or is it kind of just like a one size fits all? You know, it starts at 3% bonus and goes up to 6% bonus or something like that.
There's just one perk and it's not branched at all depending on what weapon it is. There is, though, an exponential curve. So the effect gets stronger the lower you get in the magazine, relatively, like it's not a linear thing.
Are there restrictions at all on how it works for things like sniper rifles or fusion rifles where the damage profile basically changes like really dramatically as opposed to something like an LMG where an LMG, you know, has 50 shots and each shot is like a small increment. Sniper rifle only has 4 shots. The last 2 shots do substantially more damage than any of the other ones. Is that just, it's kind of just the way the perk works and it's just fine?
Yeah, it's just an artifact of it being based on percentage of magazine. So the effect will just be stronger on stuff that has smaller mag size.
All right, so another perk, and I'm really curious about this as well. Switch asks, Eye of the Storm, how much does it increase accuracy and handling? And does it increase handling? Did I just forget that?
I didn't check the weapon stats side. But in any case, that's a pretty straightforward number, right?
Yes, it does increase handling, by the way.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, so I feel like that was like a plus 20 or a plus 30 or something. But the accuracy stuff is it's a 0.6 scalar on the accuracy cone and a 0.83x scalar on the accuracy cone growth.
All right, so that's just for clarity for the community, that's the scalar on the, that kind of a scalar on the cone, is that, would you say that's a pretty sizable increase in accuracy, or is it a smaller increase?
Oh, on the cone angle, yeah, that's a giant giant buff. Make your cone a lot narrower. Like anytime you're messing with angles, right, like it's a smallish, like a numerically small change to an angle makes a massive difference. We talk about this with aim assist cones a lot, right?
Yep. I just want to make sure we put it in layman's terms. I think we're going to have a lot of people listening who may not have heard us discuss how aim assist works in the past. So,
yeah, I mean, to put it in perspective, like it almost halves the width of your accuracy cone. It's big.
Which is why we always recommend it. It's one of the best dueling perks in the game for PvP. It's a great Trials of Osiris perk.
That is, by the way, at zero shields, right? Like, it kicks in once you've taken a bunch of damage, and then once you hit zero shields, it's a max effect.
Opening shot is kind of the other end of that. Does it only apply to the first bullet fired or to the first trigger pull? So say if opening shot was on a pulse rifle, would all three bullets from that initial burst get the effects of opening shot, or literally just the first bullet?
The perk deactivates when the first bullet is fired.
So it's only the first bullet. So opening shot on a fusion rifle would only be the first bolt in the burst.
Yeah.
Ooh, that makes that perk significantly less good for weapons like that.
Yes. Yeah.
Does it affect the AA of subsequent shots by raising the initial AA floor, or does it literally just, like, it immediately resets once that first shot is fired?
It sort of immediately resets. This gets a little bit into the aim assist over sustained fire thing, which I think there's another question about later.
Yeah.
I can go into some more detail.
Okay. Headstone, do you view it as a successful perk? It's kind of one of the most unique perks we've ever gotten. Do you think it went over well? Do you think it's sought after, that people like using it?
Yeah, I think actually... So firstly, the designer on Headstone also worked on the Stasis subclass stuff, which is part of why the perk turned out so well. But yeah, I think it's the gold standard for how damage type perks ought to work. So as we go through and start making them for other damage types in the future, we're going to try and hit the Headstone bar. Like the fact that it creates a crystal in the world that provides a bit of cover. You can shoot it up to do damage. So even if you're not running a Stasis subclass, it's handy and it's fun. But if you are running a Stasis subclass, it can really tie deeply into build crafting, and that's definitely the goal of these perks.
Are we going to see more perks like Headstone that directly interact with fragments? We get Void 3.0 up here soon. Are we going to see more perks that are like Headstone, but maybe not for Stasis, for the light subclasses?
Yeah, that's definitely the eventual plan.
All right, so you were talking about, you were saying it tied into the other question. Ivan had a question about, would it be possible to get more concrete numbers on how aim assist decays versus stability, how aim assist decays with sustained fire? Is it linear? And you actually said you can't answer this question, but you wanted us to leave it in here because you wanted to briefly touch on it.
Yeah, so I can't like go super deep into the numbers, not because it's a bad idea to, but just because it's very, very complex. And in a podcast setting, I think talking about really complex topics is a mistake because it's really easy to put something out that isn't phrased quite correctly, like to your point about the TWAB. Like, we spent days going over the copy for that to try and get it to read exactly right, and we're definitely not going to be able to hit that in a one-off on a podcast. So I think it's probably a good topic for a future, like a blog post or something like that, and we definitely want to start doing some of those. That said, I can dig into it a little bit. So two factors influence how aim assist degrades as you fire. One is how long you've been firing without pausing. And a second is a scalar, which is just called recoil stability, which is its actual name so that I can refer to it later, which is derived from your stability stat. These are both effectively linear on all weapons. Technically, the first one is a curve, but on most weapons it's so close to straight that you won't really notice. And just in this example, the recoil stability thing that I mentioned is at 1.0 at zero stability and at 0.47 at 100 stability. So that has quite a dramatic effect. Like, if you have a very high stability, it will have a dramatic effect on how bad your aim assist cone gets the longer you fire the weapon without pausing.
I'm sure that will help a lot, and I'm sure we would all look forward to seeing like a blog post or something that really went deep dive into that with graphics and stuff like that, or examples. That'd be a really cool thing to do. We're going to talk about stats for a little bit. So accuracy penalties, like the in-air accuracy penalty, are those per weapon archetype? Are they per family or subfamily, I guess? How much does Icarus Grip actually reduce that penalty?
Yeah, so accuracy penalties, like the airborne one in particular, is an angle that's added to the accuracy cone. And that's set per weapon type. So like hand cannons have a 0.66 degree airborne accuracy penalty, which is added to the accuracy cone width. Icarus and also the precision hand cannon intrinsic both multiply this by 0.25, so it's like a 75% reduction in the accuracy cone.
So it's a pretty huge change.
Yeah, it's a massive change.
What does Icarus Grip do on shotguns then? Is it mostly the same thing?
Yeah, it does exactly the same thing. And it's been very hard to explain this in a way that people fully understand. But yeah, it basically reduces the error on your whole cone. Like, your whole cone will turn to face the direction of your error, right? And this just reduces that variation. It doesn't affect spread or anything like that.
So with shotguns, the cone that you're talking about is only where that center pellet gets fired, and then it builds the spread around that center pellet, right?
Exactly.
So it affects the accuracy of the center pellet, and then where the center pellet goes, the spread gets built in that pattern around it, which you talked about last time was like pie slices, basically, and like the pellet will be somewhere within the pie slice, and that's how it builds the spread around it.
Yeah, exactly.
So I guess that's really interesting. That in light of the hip fire on shotguns really has me interested in combining those two items on a shotgun now. Icarus does more than I expected. I knew it was strong.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
That's why it's such a good combo on hand cannons. Hand cannons already have decent inner accuracy by themselves compared to other guns in the sandbox. And you put Icarus on it, and they're just a whole other level. How important is the accuracy stat on bows then? Because I know that bows are the only ones that have like an actual visible accuracy stat.
Yeah, and I think this is depends on what sort of distances you typically play at, but I find that the accuracy stat is very important because it's a cone. Lepus accuracy is a cone. The further away you are from your target, the more important it is. So it's not quite exactly the same as range, but like range controls the accuracy cone stat on all other weapons, right? So yeah, I would have it as high as possible, or you're not going to be able to hit things at range reliably.
And we talked about is it that the bows don't have damage fall off, right? They just like hit, and that's why there's no range stat. Like the actual range effectiveness doesn't a set amount, and then accuracy, the cone itself, the accuracy cone is the only thing that can actually change. So you guys just made it the accuracy stat.
Yeah.
Okay. So aim assist, like if you were to use like targeting adjusters or something like that on a bow, that is affecting what part of the accuracy cone, or is it affecting the accuracy cone at all?
Technically, it's not affecting the accuracy cone at all. That said, like you as a player are aiming near a thing, your aim assist stat is pulling it closer to the thing, and then your accuracy cone, your accuracy stat is determining how on target the shot is when it actually comes out. So you want to have aim assist and accuracy fairly high, but they're not technically interconnected.
Talking about aim assist from Artemid, are there special mechanics to how aim assist falls off towards the end of that cone? Does, you know, the type of aim assist change? Are you more likely to get body shots or headshots? Does it simply scale down in its effectiveness and then cease to exist as it hits like a range threshold? Or is it some combination of those things?
So it's similar to how damage falloff works, where you have a damage, like a near falloff value, and everything that's smaller than that, you have like the full effect of aim assist, or you do full damage. And then out to the aim assist far falloff, it just decays down to zero. So like it'll get the aim assist, the effect of aim assist will get weaker the further you get into falloff.
So we'll pull the bullet less far away. And then it also, like, does the stickiness when you're on controller, does that also degrade? I mean, I know it does at a certain point. You lose that stickiness, yeah. Right? But that the strength of that stickiness degrades the further away the target is?
Yeah, so again, you'll have full strength of that stickiness inside the near distance, and then it will decay, and then it'll go away completely outside of the far distance.
Interesting.
Or rather, a little floor outside of the far distance.
All right, so we've got a question here from Gyrda? I walked into that one. Yeah. So anyway, this Guardian says, "Hey Chris, hope you're well. Is there a point at which stability has diminishing returns on a weapon? So essentially, are the benefits of stability linear or on a curve?" And he's kind of asking your opinion if we should always aim to have a specific level of stability, or just the more the better.
So it is linear, and technically, more stability is always better, but there's an interesting artifact with certain weapons, for example, hand cannons, where they actually feel a bit better to use if they have a little bit of kick, as long as they're fully resetting between. So like there is a value at which you don't benefit from more stability on certain weapons because they will reset completely anyway. But in most cases, yeah, more stability is better.
So you're saying that because of the rate of fire, like even if the animation plays out over a certain distance, they'll always reset by the time you can fire again. What you don't want is a weapon that has such bad stability that when it kicks up, by the time you're ready to fire, the reticle is still up, elevated, as opposed to back on target.
Yep.
So it feels like aggressive hand cannons would be a prime example of a weapon where the stability doesn't need to be very high because the rate of fire is so low. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, I think that's accurate. Like, we're specifically talking about recoil here, but of course stability affects a bunch of other stuff as well. So you want to have it high for other reasons. But yeah, there is certainly a capped out. Sorry, on some weapons, there's a limit to how high you need it to be.
So Ivan has got a question about shotguns. He just says, what are the aim assist cone angles on shotguns? So I think he's actually looking for some hard numbers on this one. I don't know if you have those up and ready. If not, it's all right. But that's what he's asking for.
Yeah. So at zero aim assist stat, the cone is 5.25 degrees. And at 100 stat, it's 5.75 degrees. So there's not a whole lot of variance. Although, like, as we always say, like, it's bigger than it sounds when it comes to cone sizes. But
we have like the Fusion Rifle crew in the Discord. There's a group of users, yes, who just test the daylights out of fusion rifles, and they provided me with a substantial list of questions that I was able to narrow down to about four of, I think, the most important questions. So they want to know, how do the various stats actually affect the bolt grouping on fusions? And they listed range, stability, aim assist, recoil direction, accuracy. How do those stats specifically towards fusions, how do they actually affect bolt grouping? So the 7 or 5 or 9 bolts that are fired in one burst, they spread apart in a certain pattern. How do those stats affect that?
Okay, so there isn't actually an accuracy stat,
right,
on fusion rifles, but the accuracy cone and like cone growth and stuff is determined by the range stat. And as we've discussed, like as you sustain fire or as a burst comes out, your accuracy gets worse and worse, which will result in the last few bolts sometimes completely missing. So for that reason, it's useful to have range as high as possible. Stability reduces recoil. Recoil will do a similar thing. Although at least with recoil, you can correct for it if you've got a fine hand on the sticks, right? Like you can pull down a little bit and compensate. But yeah, enough recoil will make stuff miss, particularly if you don't have vertical recoil. Aim assist works the same as on other weapons. But as with shotguns, it's very useful on controller because of the extra stickiness, keeping you on target during a burst, like on a burst weapon or a sustained fire weapon. The stickiness is very important. Recoil direction makes a burst more vertical, and guardians are mostly vertical, so that's useful, and it makes it easier to correct for recoil too.
So it's pretty self-explanatory for the most part, right? But like you could argue that if you are very, very good at manually controlling the recoil, that range and aim assist are probably going to be the two most efficient stats for you to dump stuff into on fusion rifles, because those two things you can't really do on your own.
You definitely want recoil direction as well, because if you don't have like as vertical recoil direction as you can get, then it's very hard to compensate, so it'll go side to side.
Which is why the aggressive fusion rifle Coriolis Force is darn near useless in PvP.
Yeah, it was a worthy experiment, but I think we're done.
It was definitely fun. So a couple other questions. How does charge time masterwork work on fusions currently? Is the damage decrease a percent or a flat amount, like just -2 to damage? And is it the same across all fusion rifle frames?
So the charge time masterwork, as with all other masterworks, changes the charge time stat. So it's not a percent, it's not a flat amount, and it's not the same across frames. Instead, it's like if you give a precision fusion a charge time masterwork, it will move it a bit towards an adaptive. And there's some points at which they overlap, right? Like precisions and adaptives almost overlap if you have like a charge time masterwork and the old version of liquid coils.
So that leads into the next question. Would something like accelerated coils, which now this question makes less sense, but it was, would accelerated coils and or a charge time masterwork be applied before backup plan or Adagio's multipliers? But now accelerated coils and charge time masterwork are different. So how are all those charge rate multipliers like stacked onto a fusion rifle?
So the important one is that the stat is set first. So like you'll have your charge time stat, and then everything else multiplies on top of that, so it doesn't matter what the order is.
Okay, so the charge time masterwork would be the one that goes first, basically, because that's actually affecting the stat, and then everything else is just a multiplier on top of that.
Yeah.
Are those, are they multiplicative, or are they additive? Like, do they work the same way damage works?
They're multiplicative. Yeah, it's all multiplicative.
And kinetic slot fusion when?
Soon.
Soon. That's optimistic. That's good. I feel like we've been waiting for a very, very long time for that.
Well, stasis makes it possible, right?
Oh, hey, there we go. That's exciting.
So now we're into some general questions. These questions are going to wrap out the podcast for us. So just jump right into them. Naya asks, how do you feel about facelifting archetypes like you did for the 120s and Beyond Light? Things like completely breaking away range values to better balance the different subfamilies.
Yeah, we actually love reworking weapon types when there's a need or when they're not sufficiently differentiated. It's good fun. And it can have really good results. Like, I think the fusion rifle rework is a good example where, you know, everyone hated on Cartesian coordinate for like months and months and months, and then the fusion rifle rework happened and suddenly it was the best fusion in the game. I think we're likely to do more of that stuff, although probably not to such an extreme degree. I don't think we're likely to collapse subfamilies into each other like we did with hand cannons, like combining 150s down into 140s. I like that was a very specific case, because if we hadn't done that, everyone would just have kept using their 150s. Like, we couldn't rely on them cycling out of the game. And I don't think there are really any other cases where one subfamily is just so clearly better that there's no way that you could tune the others to compete.
All right. So we've got a question from Ren. I enjoy using fusions a lot, and I sometimes find that my loadout choices are limited due to most fusions being located in the energy slot. Considering that glaives have been announced as being located primarily in the energy slot, I'm curious as to how the team makes decisions on limiting weapon types to a specific weapon slot and how they view the trade-offs in terms of players being able to pair their favorite weapons, especially when they reside in the same weapon slot. So not dissimilar to the kinetic slot fusion win question, but a little bit more broadly applied.
So good news with stasis again, that like effectively removes one of the constraints on fusion rifles, which is kinetic fusion rifle is a pretty weird concept, and it's very well suited to an exotic. Like, obviously Bastion, if it's shooting little bits of metal, that makes sense. Having a kinetic weapon that shoots bolts of energy is a little weird. I'm not going to talk about glaives. You can wait and see what they're like. But in general, we try to balance weapon types across slots, because otherwise we end up with overcrowding and that kind of thing.
All right, very good. So yeah, okay, so it's sort of the same answer then, that stasis is solving problems for us. And, you know, if we ever, in some far distant, unforeseeable future, if we ever get some fifth damage type, that might also just expand that possibility. But for now, stasis is a good answer. A sixth damage type.
Paul Tassi believes it's going to be toxic, is what he thinks. Yes. Poison is going to be the next one, so.
That is the obvious one. We have all these weapons that do that, right?
Yeah, I mean, the whole Vice, like Foundry, seems like it'd be based around poison type stuff, so.
So then Hugo asks, where are your goalposts with regards to balancing around weapon rolls? Do you aim to balance around the S-tier potential rolls, the base stock standard rolls, or somewhere in between?
So we actually have guidelines for weapon quality based on the source. So, for example, trials and raid weapons can have the best stats and can roll multiple, like, god roll type perk combinations, no bad combinations allowed, like that kind of thing. Whereas stuff in other pools, you can have, like, maybe there's one or two really spicy rolls in there, but there's other stuff which is just more vanilla. The stats aren't allowed to be quite so high. I feel like that mostly answers the question.
No, I think that's fair. Yeah, so in-game content gives in-game results, essentially.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we're definitely okay with weapons from what we call our pinnacle activities just being a bit stronger.
All right. So Exploiter Jim asks, how does the Bungie weapons team see itself as kingmakers in regards to weapon balance in future patches, is the intent always net neutral, or does the team allow for some more dynamic elements? I'm not quite sure I follow exactly where he's going here.
He's trying to say, like, are you... So this used to happen back in D1, where they'd be like, it's season of the scout rifle, or it's season of the auto rifle, right? And they would, like... They wanted to constantly rotate what the meta was. And so they purposefully would balance some stuff up a little bit so that it was a little bit spicier than other things, as opposed to actually trying to keep like the top level of gameplay, you know, equivalently balanced, is I think what he's asking.
Okay.
Yeah. So the goal isn't necessarily perfect symmetrical balance. Like, I think if you ever hit that state in a game, it gets really stale. What we do want, though, is for every weapon in the game to be viable. So, like, it's okay, for example, that not that many people use sidearms, but sidearms are actually pretty strong, and it's okay if they're niche. We don't want, like, sidearms to have an equal share of all primary weapon types, right? And similarly, with special weapons, we're okay with shotguns having the lion's share, because other weapons which are currently niche, if they were dominant, would be really unpleasant to play against. So we do try for balance, but we don't try for perfect balance. We don't typically try for, like, artificially elevating something, but we're fine with the meta shifting around. Mostly we'll make some changes and then players kind of solve the meta over the next couple of months, and that keeps everyone occupied for a good while.
Yeah, that's... I mean, we've talked about that before on the show, but we're, like, a world in where snipers or fusions outnumber shotguns in the Crucible is not a good state of the Crucible. Like... That would be an incredibly frustrating experience to play in. Like, it is good for shotguns to have the lion's share, like you said. Now, they don't necessarily need to make up 90% of special weapons.
Yeah.
But we definitely don't want 7 out of 12 players in control match to be using fusion rifles.
Yeah, 100%.
And so then, you know, and this may be a question you can or cannot answer. But he goes on to ask, for which queen can we expect a spicy mix-up? Or more of what we have currently. He says he personally enjoys the current meta with some obvious outliers, Tex Mechanica related. That said, does enjoy a shakeup from time to time.
Yeah, so I don't think we're going to see, like, one thing deliberately rise to the top. But that said, like, if you look at trials reports, the top 10 weapons, we've nerfed 5 of those. I was a little bit shocked when I looked at it and realized. But yeah, there were definitely some high outliers that we needed to bring down, and I think that will give players a lot more space to explore. So we should see a lot more diversity.
So Hugo's got a second question. You can probably only answer half of this, but he says, handling stat bonuses given by perks and mods appear to have no effect on swords. Is this an intentional design balancing choice, a bug, or just a limitation of how they were implemented? He said, if it is intentional, can we expect it to be similar on the new weapon type? But obviously you don't have to answer that second part. But the sword one, I actually didn't know that handling doesn't really seem to have an effect on swords.
Yeah, handling does nothing at all on swords.
Okay, so that is intended?
That is intended, but it causes a couple of issues. So it may be something that we look at somewhere down the line. And yeah, glaives are their own beast completely. Like, they don't share much on swords.
Okay. Old Man Lucid said, given the lack of aggressive pulse rifles and your previous note of enjoying them, what would be your ideal next edition? And he does clarify, like, I'm not asking for Witch Queen, but if you could personally build your perfect aggressive pulse rifle, would it just be Blast Furnace from Black Armory?
I mean, I have a what I consider my God roll Blast Furnace, which is max stability, Zen moment. And yeah, that was a ton of fun. Like, I really enjoyed using that back in Black Armory days. But I think there are so many interesting perks now, it would actually be really hard to pick. Yeah, as we mentioned in the Headseeker patch note, there is at least one in Witch Queen, and it's a spicy one.
Oh, so we may get a chance to get our ideal aggressive burst pulse rifle.
Speaking of Black Armory, any chance Black Armory? Maybe one of the foundries added to the world loot pool at some point in time?
Well, I think, like, if you're going to add a fifth foundry, Black Armory makes a lot of sense, like, for legendary weapons. That said, like, it's a good example. So I think, like, there will be opportunities to bring some of these old fan-favorite weapons back, but we don't see any value in bringing them back piecemeal. Like, oh, we bring back Blast Furnace and Owlstringer and, like, other random grab bag of stuff. Like, we would want to wait for There's a big Callus beat and some Menagerie stuff comes back, or there's a big Ada beat and some Black Armory stuff comes back. I think that's absolutely on the table. We don't have anything specific to say.
And then finally, last question for the podcast. This one's from me. Le Monarch Catalyst, when?
Soon.
All right. Well,
right after it gets nerfed, Mercules.
Hopefully not. But like I said, I'm you know, Le Monarch has had its time in the sun. I appreciate it. Despite what my Twitter presence would lead you to believe, I am okay with Le Monarch getting a nerf because I do believe that there are some overpowered aspects of it. I would like it to not be destroyed, but we'll see how it goes. Like I said, I've already moved on to Ariana's Vow, so I'm the consummate anti-meta hipster. So, all right, thank you guys very much for tuning in. Chris, thank you for spending the time with us. That ended up being a little closer to 2 hours than the 90 minutes that we were optimistically thinking. We do have some housekeeping we got to do. We got to thank a couple people. You guys are welcome, if you do not care about any of that stuff, to bounce out and end the podcast now. We're not hiding any secrets of Witch Queen at the tail end of the podcast. So you don't have to stick around, but we're going to go ahead and say thank you to our patrons. And I believe, Kutch, you've got the list of new patrons up for us.
I do. And I do want to say thank you again, Chris, for joining us. This has been a treat as ever. I really appreciate the insights into just the thinking that goes into all of this. And hopefully...
I can't believe we got all of it done. Honestly.
I know.
That was shocking. I'm actually amazed that I didn't wear out my welcome with that 3-hour epic one last time. But this was good. We blitzed through it.
Honestly, no. We had people be like, so can we expect another 3-hour one this time? Like, they were like, I had my lunch break for 3 days set when you guys put out those podcast episodes. That was great. Did we get another one? It's like, unfortunately, not this time.
Fantastic. I mean, I think that we do like doing these kinds of things and having members of the design team talk to the community. We are trying to rotate it around a bit. So like you've seen, you know, Kevin and Eric like come out and talk about abilities, and we're hoping to do more of that stuff over time.
Well, you know, we've got a PvE show now. If you want to have any of the raid designers or anything like that on, we've got three very experienced PvE in-game people who would love to talk to them. So
yeah, I will definitely pass that on.
Okay, well, let's get some thank yous in. So first off, we do have two new patrons joining the crew. So big shout out and welcome to Boomer19. Thank you so much for your support. And thank you so much as well to Sam93. We appreciate your pledge and generosity, as we do the ongoing support of all of our patrons who give so generously to support this podcast, pay for our hosting and our microphones and all of the things that go into making this podcast what it is today. And really, you know, the patrons are a big driver that have led us to the kind of success that has enabled us to bring guests like Chris on. So huge, huge thank you to everyone who has helped to make this happen for us. And a very special thank you to our sponsor, Guardians. These are patrons who give on a truly massive level to support the podcast. So a big thank you in the opposite order that I previously announced them to ZenSoCal, The Shazzle, Starscream S13, Binary Wolf, Askian Monk, Blackhammer Tech, Conquer King 420, This Moment 23, Deacon, and A Solitary Bird. And we don't have any other special patron news to announce at this time, except that if you did sign up for the 2021 patron rewards and you've stuck with us, those are beginning to ship out this month. So look for those in the mail. Some phenomenal work done by Irresolute, very talented artist in the Destiny community that we were able to collaborate with, and it turned out better than we could ever have hoped for. So if you've been waiting for an item, that patience is about to be rewarded. If you joined us a little late, if you joined us right at the very end and just in the nick of time, that will be that order will be shipping out in the next batch at the beginning of March. So just to set expectations for when that might arrive. And with that, I'll pass it over to you, Mercules, to say thank you to another group of Guardians.
Yeah, we really appreciate everybody who rates us on Spotify or on Apple Podcast or leaves us a review on Apple Podcast. That helps us immensely with discovery. So this week we got two new reviews. We got Essential Listening, 5 stars by Burn Lay David. butchered that name. I apologize for that. But he's from Great Britain. So if you left us a podcast review and you're from Great Britain, it's probably you. He says, been a listener for over a year, and the podcast just goes from strength to strength. Excellent hosting with balanced comments and reviews, and a must for any Destiny 2 PvPer. Listen in conjunction with the Versus Enemies podcast for a truly comprehensive insight into weapon archetypes, perks, and loadouts in the D2 sandbox. So good, I became a Patreon. Keep up the good work. Well, thank you very much for that. I appreciate the kind words. Thank you for joining us in the Patreon. I hope we just read your name out, too. I don't know which one it is. I don't know which one you got matched up with, but thank you for joining us. I hope we see you in the Discord as well.
I love the double whammies, hitting this from two angles. That's fantastic. Thank you so much.
And then last podcast is from Gavin M. He says, excellent podcast for all your Destiny needs. 5 stars. My last review was not read on the show, but I really want to let Merc and Kit know that I love their show. I recently started listening to D&B and it's amazing. I love the technicality they bring to the Destiny community. Whether it's trying to find what the perfect gun is or listening to banter, D&B is perfect for any listener who wants to delve deeper into the game. Thank you for all you guys do. I truly appreciate your insights about my favorite game. Also, excellent podcast to listen to while walking the dogs. Thank you very much for that review, Gavin M. Really appreciate it. Remember, if you guys want to get your podcast review read out loud, all you got to do is leave us one on Apple Podcasts. If you're from outside the United States, you might have to wait a little bit because our aggregator is a little slow, or you can message us and we will read it out. And I believe that's it for the show. So thank you for tuning in to episode 247. Might have to split it up into two parts. I don't know. This one might take me a bit to edit. But yeah, we'll see you guys again next week. And Chris, thank you so much again for sticking around with us for 2 full hours. I don't know that this is exactly the way you want to spend your Thursday night, but it means the world to us, and I know it means the world to our community, so we really appreciate it.
I love nerding out about Destiny weapon stuff. It's great.
There are worse things to do, right? Worse ways to spend time. So that's it, guys. Thanks, and we'll see you next week. Bye.
Peace. We'll be right back.